Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
Oh, here's this new one, Summer Rain. That's the kind Mary Haynes is so keen about.
Oh, yes, that's it.
A friend of ours, Mrs. Stephen Haynes, simply dotes on this.
Really?
Her husband picked it out for her. Perhaps you sold it to him, Stephen Haynes, the engineer.
Oh, I'm afraid I don't remember. You see, we have so many men come in here.
Awfully good-looking, tall, fair, distinguished. I'm sure you wouldn't overlook him.
I'm sorry, but when one's mind is on one's own business.
Of course, of course. And as you say, you have so many men.
Oh, I wouldn't think that one suggested your personality at all. It's called, oomph.
How amusing.
Oh, what's that?
Closing time. The bums rush in melody, dear.
Good night, Pat.
Good night, Crystal. Oh. I'm afraid we're keeping you.
Oh, that's quite all right.
Well, I'll take this. Charge it and send. Here's my name and address.
25 cents. My, you are getting off economically, aren't you?
Aren't I?
It'll be out tomorrow, Mrs. Prowler.
Fowler.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Mrs. Fowler.
Pertinent little upstart. If she thinks I'm going to let her get away with that, she's got another thing. Come on, you weren't exactly any little Pollyanna yourself. It's no wonder she called
that Prowler, really.
She's laughing at us. I know, I can see from here.
Well, I believe she is.
She called me that deliberately. I'll have her fired. I'll go straight to the management this minute.
Hi, everyone. This is Margot D. Just a quick correction at the top of the show. We say that Haley Kate Eisenberg, who plays Little Mary in the 2001 revival of The Women, was the star of Curly Sue. This would be impossible because she wasn't even born yet. Actually, the star of Curly Sue is Alison Porter. We regret the error, and we wish both actors very well. Now, enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books, usually, that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host and birthday girl, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
And the girl that just got her first vaccination shot today.
Hey, me too. We're both halvesies.
Yes, yes. Oh, I'm so excited.
Me too.
Oh, such a relief.
It really is. Yeah. Which one did you get?
Moderna.
Me too.
Yep.
Did you feel any, we didn't talk about this before we came on here. Did you have any side effects?
No, I hear the first one, it's pretty smooth. You don't even feel it. It's like your arm probably the next day. It's the second one that's a little iffy for people.
Yeah, we Todd and I both got Moderna, and we got hit by like a truck the first day.
Huh.
Yeah, it was really weird. So I don't know if it's backwards for us or what. So now I'm a little nervous about the second one. But I'll take it.
Yes, exactly. It's better than COVID.
Oh, yes. Anytime. Oh, that's so cool. I'm so glad.
Yeah.
So for those of you who are new, we are both named Margot. We are on opposite sides of the United States. I am in California. Margot D is in Brooklyn. Usually, this is a podcast about books that have been adapted into movies. But since we've been in this lockdown season, we've been doing a brand new episode every single week, which means that we are using other literary sources, short stories, novellas, plays. And we did all musicals in the month of March, if you're a fan of musicals. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of easing out of that with a play today. And we're going to be talking about The Women.
I am so excited.
Me too. But before we get to that, again, if you're new, there are a few places where you can interact with us and other listeners of Book Versus Movie on the internet.
Yes, please send us your suggestions. We have a basic Facebook page. You can like that if you want to do it there. Or we have a Facebook group. It's a private group. So you type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group. That's a place to do it. We're on Twitter at Book vs. a Movie. You just spell that out. We're on Instagram. We're trying to gain our Instagram followers. So please follow us on Instagram. And you can also send suggestions there. Book vs. Movie Podcast. And our we have an old-timey email. Book vs. Movie Podcast. Spell that all out at gmail.com. Send us your suggestions, and or if you would like some stickers, we just got a batch of stickers. Margot, yours will draw Friday or Saturday. You should get yours. So please, if you want them, let us know. We're happy to send them off to you.
That is very exciting. I really am looking forward to those. I'm really enjoying our new logo very much.
Me too.
Today we are talking about the women, and we were just saying before we got on the air that there's a lot of people involved in this project that we've talked about in the past. But before we get into this very revolutionary work of American theater, we need to talk about the extraordinary life of Claire Booth Luce.
My God, what do we say about this woman who basically invented herself, came from very, tough background, a really, hard scrabble life. And then she just married really well and became the managing editor of Vanity Fair. Oh, no biggie. She had an affair with Roald Dahl during World War II. And she then converted. She was Democrat, then she converted to Catholicism and then became a Republican. She was a senator or a congresswoman.
She was in the House of Representatives.
Yep.
At a time, we should also talk about when she was born. She was born 1903. So this was like women were not doing even a fraction, like any one of these things that we're talking about was so unusual for a woman to be in any of these fields,
right,
let alone all of them. She's in the House of Representatives as a Republican. It's 1942. And for those of you who are not from the United States,
right,
I just want to, just so we understand what we're talking about, the ideological leanings of the two American political parties are kind of fluid throughout the 20th century. So when we're talking about World War II, 1940s era, United States, Republicans were kind of the more progressive party in many ways. Mm-hmm. And Democrats were the more, racist. I don't know how else to say it. The more racist. the Democratic Party was pitching a lot of policy that they would blanch at today. So she had many political views that were, by today's standards, very progressive, very anti-fascist, anti-racism, obviously feminist, but in those days, the Republican Party was sort of the place where she could do most of that kind of work. It's an interesting political time.
Exactly. And she became, after that, she was the U.S. ambassador to Italy.
Yeah, just that.
Just that. She married Henry Luce, and he was a huge publisher, Time Magazine, I believe Life Magazine. He had a lot of money, but he was very socially awkward. She was the one that was outgoing. She was the one that was, she was an actress for a time. But she was a writer when she met him. She was the managing editor at Vanity Fair, and she gave him the idea for Life Magazine. She was an iconoclast. She just was somebody who, she was married once before. She was divorced, by the way. And then she married Henry Luce, and she had a child. When her child died, it's so sad. Her daughter was 20 years old when she was killed in a car accident. And this is when she converted to Roman Catholicism. She was somebody who would say was on the liberal side. She was certainly a progressive. Later on in her life, she supported every single Republican candidate, right up to Ronald Reagan.
And was Nixon,
very conservative.
She was all in.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. So she didn't like Phyllis Schlafly. Like, they were conservative women who felt that women had a certain place in society, and she was pretty strict about it. She has a nonprofit that's to help college kids, and it's Claire Booth Luce Policy Institute. It's a nonprofit think tank. It's there to promote conservative ideas, and they hire speakers for college tours like Ann Coulter. And she was friends with people like William F. Buckley and Margaret Thatcher. And yeah.
I mean, I don't understand. It's really, she's complicated.
Yes.
She's busting down doors right and left. And like I said, you know, especially when she was in the House of Representatives, she was representing by today's standards, certainly by the standards of her later political views, very progressive. But, you know, she was also like Reagan. Reagan was a Democrat, and then he became the Republican.
Yeah.
And similarly to like Phyllis Schlafly, I mean, you have these women who broke all manner of barriers, but kind of the older they got, for whatever reasons, the way things played out in their lives,
right,
their view of feminism kind of got smaller and smaller. Even though women have a lot to thank, arguably, as much as I can't stand Phyllis Schlafly, I arguably have a lot to, they blazed a lot of trails.
Yeah.
And she's just one of those women.
And she's super clever, great writer.
Oh, gosh. Great writer.
Great writer. And so let's talk about the women. I mean, she's written a few things, but this is, I think, what she's mostly known for as far as her playwriting. And The Women is a play that comes out in 1936. And we're talking, it's a comedy of manners, as they say. And you think about what's going on in the world in 1936. It's before Hitler takes over. It's the middle of the Depression, of all things. And she writes this play that's about women. I'm looking at the notes, and it says, so I have the original play in my hands, and then I sent out on YouTube, I put a clip, and I saw in October 2001, like a month after the 9/11 attacks, I went to see The Women on Broadway.
Ah.
PBS filmed it, and then I put the YouTube clip, and we have to talk about that in a second, but just
we will talk about it.
Oh, there's things to say. Go ahead.
But it's an interesting play. So I was watching the movie, and the movies, there's a few things that are different. We'll talk about that when we get to it. But but basically the movie is pretty true to the play.
Yeah.
So I was watching it, and my daughter kind of walked in, and she's like, "What are you watching?" And I was telling her, I was like, "Oh, it's this play. It's called The Women by this woman, Claire Booth Luce." And I was told her a little bit about that. And she was like, "Oh, The Women, that's a great title." And I was like, "No, there's no men. There's no men. It's like 100 and some women in this movie, zero men." And she was like, "Oh, so then this is the first movie that passes the Bechdel test."
And I was exactly.
No.
Not at all. That's the ironic part. Yeah.
No. No. Sorry. No, it doesn't. But there are no men. Like you were saying in last week's episode, you know, in the script, the script, a theater script will tell you how many roles for women and how many roles for men. And the script has no roles for men because it is all women. But it's women who exclusively talk about men. But it's also, and I never looked at it this way until this time, looking at this movie. Thinking about like what you just mentioned, getting back to what you were saying about the political landscape, the global political landscape, the rise of fascism, and two, the domestic political landscape of the Depression, and the women in The Women, with very few exceptions, the main characters in The Women, with one exception, are all stratospherically wealthy women. Mm-hmm. With very little on their minds that's going on in the world, apart from their little gossipy, you know, marriages and the, you know, what they can gossip about each other about their marriages and money and this and that behind their back. You know, they seem completely unaware that there's a depression going on. They seem completely unaware that the world is going into war again. And their lives, you know, are about these very superficial, really not that important things. I mean, apart from the marriages, which we'll talk about. So anyway, this is the first time I really was paying attention to the politics at play, because of course, Claire Booth Luce, super political, you know, love her politics or hate her politics, she was very into politics. So that is definitely there. I just never really looked at it before, I guess. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that made me really look at it with that kind of a lens was I saw a quote somewhere this time and somewhere along the line from Claire Booth Luce's point of view, the character that she most sympathized with was Crystal, who is,
is the
quote unquote villain of the piece. So I thought that was very interesting because Crystal is the working class one. Crystal is the one who is struggling, you know, in the real world.
Well, so did Claire.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very interesting.
It is very interesting. So should we talk about basically what this play is about? It's about a group of women in, I would say, the Upper East Side of New York City.
Definitely the Upper East Side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And their lives are about shopping and going to the spa and getting their nails done and lunches and gossip. And the really wealthy ones like Mary, who's our lead. And this makes me crazy. It's like all the Mrs. Fowler, Mrs. Stephen Haynes, like they're all known by their husband's names. And it's such it was a very formal thing. People used to talk that way to one another. It was extremely formal. But Mary is our lead. And she's played by Nora Shearer in the movie. She is super sweet. We like Mary right away, even though she's incredibly privileged. She has a house in Great Neck with a horse. I mean, this is money. During the Depression. Yes. Okay. My mom, I don't know if I told you, my mom grew up in Great Neck, but she was, her parents took care of big mansions. So they lived in the little house next to the big house. My mom loved this movie and she would talk about these women were just like, they would take these shopping trips to the city and then come back. And it was just gossip, gossip, gossip. That was like the currency that they had over each other. So Mary is married to a man named Stephen Haynes and she has a beautiful daughter, Little Mary. And she's like a little mini her. Like I like Little Mary. She's spunky.
I like Little Mary too.
Yeah. And that's Claire Booth Luce, like putting that in there. And she realizes that from her friends that her husband is seeing a counter girl that sold him perfume. And that counter girl is named Crystal Allen. She's got her hooks in for this guy. And there's a lot of feline kind of imagery going on because, you know, women are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's that old idea of women are catty and they have their claws out. So there's Mrs. Fowler and she is the busybody of the group. And she has her friends there's Peggy, who's Mrs. John Day. She has her peeps and then they go to Mary and say, oh, we think your husband's fooling around. And she refuses to believe it, but he's not coming home for dinner and he's not returning her calls or he's returning his calls late and he's not there for birthdays. So she knows something is up. And then she runs into Crystal and there's a whole scene where they're, you know, trying on lingerie and dresses and Crystal's got an account from Stephen and Mary's across the hall and they're like their dressing rooms are across the hall and then they have a confrontation and Mary decides, I'll let Stephen decide what he's going to do. He's going to pick me or this person, but you know, we can't continue with this. And Mary's mother, her advice is forget it. Turn a blind eye to it. He treats you well. He doesn't love this person. He's going through a midlife crisis. When a woman does, they get a new hairdresser or they redo their home. They don't think to do that. They need another. He's not going to leave you for her. But Mary has some pride. And I think she doesn't want to be in a loveless marriage. She really does care about him.
Right.
Right. So what happens at the time is if you want to get a divorce, and I would recommend if you really want to learn about divorces, there's a podcast called Trashy Divorces. And they really talk about like the history of divorce and their episodes. And there's a time when you needed to establish residency in a different part, depending on where you were. If you went to Reno, Nevada, where my parents live forever, right outside of Reno, you live there for 6 weeks and then you can get a quickie divorce. Or people would go to Mexico, or there was, I think, a place in Alabama. But there was places you could go. Because if it's in New York and you're getting divorced, you're going to be tied up with lawyers forever. And she just wants a settlement and let it go. But the problem is that Mary is so in love with him that, it, you know, we fast forward 2 years later and she still is in love with this guy and she can't give him up. And the other women are going through divorces and we get to a ranch in Reno, which is like my favorite part of the whole story. That's where I feel like,
with my kettle.
Oh my God, with Lucy and all these, we meet the Countess de Lava. We meet Miriam, who is just this spitfire, who just really, she and then Sylvia comes out because she's getting divorced from her husband. So there's all this stuff going on. And anyway, Mary comes back and then she realizes through her daughter that Steven's miserable because Crystal is terrible. She is having an affair with the Countess's fifth husband, a guy named Buck, who has a career in Hollywood. And this woman's like and he's like, she's like in her 50s and sixth or 60s, and he's much, much younger. Crystal's seeing him on the side, and the daughter, little Mary, overhears it. And then little Mary kind of whispers in her mother's ear, like, I don't think Dad's happy with this girl. And she has enough evidence. And there's a whole comedy about they're at an event and they're in the ladies' room and they're trading gossip back and forth and Mary traps her. And then at the very end, spoiler, she goes, Stephen and Mary are going to be back together. And she's got her claws out, jungle red, which means the jungle red nail polish, which is so shows that she's serious. And it's hilarity throughout.
Yes. Yes. So she goes back to her husband and she goes back. We get the idea that she's going back with him and she's going to fight for her marriage now. That's what she's just got her claws out, which is the happy ending in 1939.
Yeah.
Or 1936. It's just fascinating. I mean, first of all, the whole portrait of these you have the upper class women and then, which is, you know, it's small, like what Margot mentioned, all of those characters that she mentioned. Mm-hmm. But then there's how many in the theater cast? 45?
Oh, 35. 35 women. 35. And then they say doubling. So in a lot of plays, people play multiple characters. It's just cheaper and more efficient.
So you have your main characters. It's whatever. It's like a dozen women. But then all those rest of those women, some of whom are playing double parts, represent these scores and scores of working women mm-hmm. whose job it is to keep this, you know, airy fairy luxurious life of these rich ladies afloat. The manicurists and the personal trainers and the facialists and the maids and the train matrons and, you know, nurses. And the lady who nurses and the lady who runs the ranch and in Reno. All of these people, all of these women who are really working hard, you know, during the Depression to keep this kind of fantasy world of these rich ladies so that they can not think about anything but their husbands and their nails.
Yes. And their perfume.
Their perfume. So I thought it was really interesting watching it, you know, thinking about Crystal being the sympathetic. She does, you can't imagine that she has an easy life. She's pretty, so she works at a perfume counter. If she was not as pretty as she was, she probably wouldn't be, you know, what do they call front of store?
Yeah.
She, you know, because of her looks, that gives her a little bit of an edge, but not that much. She's still having to work pretty hard. And, you know, women can't buy property. Women, there's lots of things that women
can't have a
do.
Credit card.
No. You know, but you see these women, these rich ladies, and they're charging to their husbands' accounts as they go floating through the department store or the day spa. But Crystal has to work for everything, and so do her friends. You know, that she's friends with the manicurist, she's friends with the shop girls. I just think it's really interesting. It's a great, rather vicious portrait of this aristocracy, even though Claire Booth Luce is somebody who started out, you know, working class, and she was herself in that position that, you know, here she was running this magazine empire that was dictating the taste to these women mm-hmm. at that time. It's just fascinating to me.
Yeah. So should we talk about the movie and then we'll go back to the 2001?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's
talk about the 1939 movie.
Okay, so let's play the trailer right now.
Take a good grip on yourself. You're going to die. Stephen Haynes is stepping out on Mary.
But Sylvia, who told you? A manicurist?
What girl?
This Crystal Allen.
Crystal Allen?
Yes, you know. The girl who's hooked Mr. Haynes.
Hey, what happened to the hot date you had on for tonight, darling?
It's hotter than ever, dear. I'm having him dine at my place. About time he found out I was a home girl.
Home girl? Get her. Why don't you borrow the quintuplets for the evening?
Because I'm all the baby he wants, Pitt.
Now's your chance to go in there and put an end to this thing, Mary. Go in there and just say a few quiet words. Tell her you'll make Stephen's life an absolute tornado till he gives her up. Look where she was 6 months ago, and look where she is now.
Sylvia, will you please let me do what I want to with my own life?
You're very confident, aren't you?
Yes, because I know Stephen couldn't love a girl like you. Well, if he couldn't, he's an awfully good actor.
Cheer up, Sherry. Wait, you've lost as many husbands as I have. Married, divorced. Oh. L'amour, l'amour. That's French for love.
You should have licked that girl where she licked you. In his arms. It's where you win in the first round, and if I know men, it's still Custer's last stand.
I've had 2 years to grow claws, Mother. Jungle red.
Hey, who are you to laugh, my pet? I've made good with my husband. Is that any way to talk to me after all I've done for you?
Oh, done what?
You didn't know a soul when you married Stephen. After all, it wasn't easy to put you over.
Stephen's fed up with you, Crystal, in your heart you know it.
Yes, take my advice, Crystal. Put your mind on your alimony.
Alimony? With what Stephen can get on you, he won't have to give you a dime.
All right, so once again, our director is George Cukor. We talked about him just a few weeks ago when we covered My Fair Lady, and one of the screenwriters is Anita Loos. She also wrote Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. There's a lot of people that we're kind of meeting up with again. We have Norma Shearer as Mrs. Stephen Haynes / Mary. Joan Crawford, we love Joan Crawford on this show. We talk about her quite a bit. She plays Crystal Allen. She's so beautiful.
She is gorgeous in this. I would almost say, I was about to say this is my favorite Joan Crawford role, but I don't think that's true. I have favorite roles of Joan Crawford, like at the various stages of her life. Uh-huh. My favorite scene, well, I'll get to that in a minute, but we're going through the cast. I was just looking at the poster for the movie, and it's, you know, Norma Shearer, Joan Crawford, Rosalind Russell. They're the women who are actually pictured on the poster, and then it says the women. It's all about men.
I know, it doesn't pass the Bechdel test. So yes,
even the poster.
The poster's like, don't worry, guys. Don't worry, men. Yeah. You can come in. You can listen to this. It'll be fun. Rosalind Russell plays Mrs. Howard Fowler, Sylvia. We talked about her when we talked about His Girl Friday and Auntie Mame, one of our favorites. Mary Boland, is the Countess. Paulette Goddard, Oh my God, is she beautiful?
She's so pretty. She's so pretty. And she's funny.
Funny as shit. She's was married to Charlie Chaplin for a while and he didn't treat her great. She plays Miriam. I love this story about her, about Clark Gable. She dated a lot of famous guys and she was on the hook to be engaged to him. And he was dropping her off at a movie set and she wanted to kiss him and he wouldn't do it because the press was around. Like, he's like, I don't want all these pictures. And she just looked at him and goes, all right, sugar, that's enough for me. And she dumped him. I just love that. Okay, sorry. Joan Fontaine, we talked about when we talked about Rebecca. Lucille Watson, she plays Peggy, John Day. Mrs. Moorhead, Lucille Watson, Phyllis Pova.
Mary's mom.
Yeah, that's the mom. Mrs. Yeah. Phelps Potter, she's Edith. She's the one that has a lot of babies.
Yeah.
Virginia Wheeler plays Little Mary. Marjorie Main as Lucy. She runs the ranch.
I love her.
Oh, my God. So those are our main characters.
Yeah. Hedda Hopper's in this.
Hedda Hopper.
I'm looking down to see. Oh, Butterfly McQueen. Same year as Gone with the Wind, this movie.
Yeah. So the movie wasn't nominated for any Oscars because it was a time when there was just a million really amazing movies that came out that year. We've discussed a bunch of them, you know, in the show. It's Gone with the Wind. It's Of Mice and Men. It's Mr. Lincoln, Young Mr. Lincoln. It's just like this Wizard of Oz was 1939. Yeah. So there's just a lot of competition that year, like really amazing people. And this movie it's 80 years old. It's still funny. I laugh out loud watching this movie. Funny.
Me too. It has so many clever lines. It's so well acted. Norma Shearer is not my favorite, but I think she's suited to this role. She's a little bit of a doormat, but not completely. It's just so brilliant. And just like, first of all, again, you're getting this, the sets are amazing. Mm. The costumes are incredible. You're getting a window, you know, if you're the general public in 1939, what a time to be going to the movies. But unfortunately, when you leave the movie theater, it's the Depression. And so you're getting to see this just lavish lifestyle of maids and furs and, oh, I'll wear my old black dress. Oh no, I'll wear my new pink dress. Silver trays, you know, right. Like mud baths. And just like in The Wizard of Oz, it's in black and white, but then in the middle, there's this color thing.
Technicolor. It's a fashion show.
Technicolor, 1939 Cuckoo Bananas fashion show.
Which some people don't like. I love it.
I love it.
I love every second
brilliant.
Of it. Yes, it does. But like you said, all of a sudden it's this Technicolor dream and then they come back into the action and then they eventually wind up in Reno. And in Reno, I love Reno. Like, I love every scene. I love how they're super catty there. They get in fist fights. They bite each other. Like, there's a scene where Sylvia is fighting Miriam, and apparently, like, Cukor really made them go at it. And he said to Rosalind Russell, Sylvia, just bite her. Just seriously, just bite her on the leg. And so she just bit her on the leg. You could see it. And
she's really fighting her.
Yeah, they're really fighting.
You little... Did you know about this?
Oh, of course, but what do you care? You don't love Howard anyway.
That has nothing to do with it. How much did he settle on you?
I made Howard pay for what he wants. You made him pay for what he doesn't want.
Why, you filthy...
Please start calling names, you Park Avenue playgirl. I know a lot more words than you do.
You're going to get out of here. You dare strike me? I got glasses on.
Oh, no, you haven't.
Oh, how do you like
Miriam, darling, now don't be vulgar.
How do you like how you are? Oh, leave them enjoy themselves. I'll go get the smell salts for the loser.
Oh, okay. Take it from the smaller. I won't try to help.
my old way.
Oh, you big fool.
Oh, crazy.
Oh.
She's a
cuckoo.
Well,
I'll
you
tell you.
Oh,
dear.
Oh.
Oh. Oh. Oh. Who's got some iodine?
In my bathroom. Help her, will you, Peggy?
Yeah, I gotta be careful of hydrophobia.
And then there's the woman who's running the ranch. Her name is Lucy, and it's played for laughs, but she's never been married, but she has three kids, and she's got a man, but he's got a bad temper, and, you know, don't like him very much. But she's just, when they're fighting, she says, what are you going to do about it? She goes, I'll give some alcohol to the loser. You know, it's like they're just, it's just so great.
It's hilarious, and it's, what is it, like 2 hours and 15 minutes? But it just whizzes by. The dialogue is so witty and so sharp. They pretty much only talk about men, but the scenes are wonderful. I love the fashion show. Again, you know, you're in this lavish world, and just in case you, it's not impressed upon you, like the class difference mm-hmm. between these women, these few women, and the many, many, you know, like 70 additional women that are in the movie, then we just push it over the edge with this crazy color, luxurious, completely impractical, you know, fashion show at a time when Americans were struggling to stay clothed and, you know, have right. shoes and stuff. It was just outrageously extravagant. And to the women and, you know, to these women in the movie, it's like, oh, nothing, you know, just, oh yeah, I'll take that. And I'll take that. Oh, that was absolutely, I like the way that was. Oh, I saw that in Paris. It wasn't worn this way. It was worn that, you know, I love it. I just think it must have been so, what is that word?
Opulent.
Oh no. Yes. But I'm saying, like, for the audience, for the 1939 audience, it must have been just like a guilty delight in the stupid lives of these women, you know, right. the frivolity and the emptiness, you know, of their lives. I think you would have gotten like a perverse little thrill at that, and related to all the staff, all the maids and the shop girls and the manicurists and whatnot that it takes to support that whole industry.
I think, yeah, people went for escapism. I think, what was it, like 10 cents to go to the movie back then, to go to the movies? It was just, that's what people wanted to see. If you're going to give me rich, give me really, really rich. And then make them miserable. Make them be unhappy with what they have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then have the people that are working hard be salt of the earth and the fun ones and the ones you want to pay attention to. It's pretty... We will talk about the play in a second. I mean, there's a few things they had to take out of it. There's just like a few curse words and things like that that they don't.
Yeah.
But that's just from the time. But it was received really well. People used to also, they had, when they traveled, not everybody flew. Most people took the train. It was a big, and so people would take a train cross country.
Days
on end. Old trains. It was like rickety tracks and everything like that.
Yeah, jostling about all over the place.
Yeah.
Talk about turbulence.
It's really, but they did, women and men did that, like to go to Reno or to Mexico or whatever to get the divorce. That's where we meet the Countess, as she's on that train going there just to get a divorce. That's where we meet Miriam. And I love Miriam's, cause, like, she meets marriage because, oh, thank God, I thought you were going to be like a real wet firecracker. You just, she seems kind of boring. Mary's not my favorite character. She's not my least favorite either, but I have so much more fun with like Rosalind Russell.
She's the straight person to this like crazy gang of ladies. I just want to shout out to Cedric Gibbons, who was the art director.
Ooh.
Did all the sets and production design for the movie. He was married to Dolores Del Rio.
Oh, wow. And I want to say that even in addition to all the women, all the women are as actors, all the animals are female.
Yeah, that's right.
So they all, like, the horse and the cat and everything.
The dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of dogs. A lot of dogs. So.
Yeah, so that was that was the hook at the time. And it's just, it still holds up. If you've never seen it, trust me, you will laugh out loud. It's like we were saying before, like a murderer's row of like really funny women. it's just great. I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Rosalind Russell in this movie is just magical. First of all, the speed at which that woman can talk, mm-hmm. which is something that she shows off in a lot of her roles that she does. I mean, she just does it so, so freaking well. And I think I read somewhere that because she really, there was some competition for that role. That's sort of like mm-hmm. the star turn in this movie. It's the character that's kind of gets the action moving, keeps it moving, has a kind of interesting journey, and is the funny, has the funniest lines, mm-hmm. really. So there was a lot of competition and she really wanted the role and they didn't think that she could do comedy.
Yeah, this was her first comedic performance and she nailed it.
Oh, did she ever?
Right.
And then not long after this is His Girl Friday and then, you know, all the other amazing roles that she's known for. But boy, she is just, every time she shows up, you're excited.
And supposedly there was some friction between Norma Shearer and Joan Crawford. Who knows how much that is true or not true?
Yeah, I read conflicting things about that. Yeah, something about, oh, what was it? Oh, I don't remember now what all the little gossipy things were about between the two of them that they didn't get along. Well, Norma Shearer, wasn't she married to like a studio executive or something like that?
Yeah, he died, I think. He's the one that died young.
And Joan Crawford, we should say, you know, just also that she came from a very rough background. You know, she had a very difficult early life. Norma Shearer, though, was, you know, Irving Thalberg, is right? That's who she was married
to. Right. I think he died young. Yeah, he was like,
gifted. And Norma Shearer, though, was always kind of a silver spoon in her mouth kind of a person. Mm-hmm. And she played those sorts of roles. So, you know, maybe there was some resentment about that. Who knows? Maybe there was none. Maybe they were the best of friends. Who knows?
We don't really know the truth. I mean, supposedly Joan Crawford was always a knitter because she was so nervous. She also was socially awkward. Joan Crawford was very, very,
very
awkward.
Insecure.
And people, I always tell this to people, they never believe. She's 5'3". We always think of her as this gigantic person.
She looks very tall in this movie in particular.
Yeah.
But she's not. She's a little bitty thing.
A little bitty thing. And she was very awkward. And that's, she learned to knit, to like do something with her hands. But supposedly George Cukor thought she was doing a little loudly, making the needles kind of hit each other. Who knows? Who knows? We still have it. It's just, I love this so much. This is just like one of my favorites.
Me too. I so, so enjoyed it. It was really fascinating learning about Claire Booth Luce. I knew some of the stuff, but there was a lot that I did not know. I always thought that she was, I mean, I knew she was a brilliant writer. I knew about the Condé Nast stuff. I didn't quite understand quite about her political career. And I did know that she had this kind of Phyllis Schlafly sort of a bent later on. But there was a lot of stuff that I didn't know. Gosh, is she a good writer?
Yeah.
And Anita Luce is no slouch either. It's such crispy, you know, it's just sparkles and crackles and it just keeps you so engaged from beginning to end. It's brilliant.
I love it. So should we talk about the 2001 revival?
Yes.
Okay.
I still remember this when I didn't see it on the stage, but I was such a sensation on Broadway.
I saw it. It was fantastic. So funny. This is like, I miss New York so much.
Isaac Mizrahi, all those Isaac Mizrahi costumes. Wow.
Yes. Well, so this was a PBS production. They filmed it. And I wish, you know, like we were saying, we just need to film more of these plays and musicals. This has to happen more often. But so we have Kristen Johnston as our Sylvia. Cynthia Nixon plays Mary Haynes. Like, what kind of perfect casting is that? I mean, Jennifer Tilly as Crystal Allen. I didn't think anybody could outdo Joan Crawford. I think Jennifer Tilly is a hoot as
She's
Crystal.
Really, really good.
Very strong.
It's very strong. And she had sort of a, you know, at that time, she had sort of a type mm-hmm. that she would play. But I feel like she's playing that against the type that you would, against the way that you would expect her to play it.
Yes.
I thought very good.
Haley Eisenberg, she was a kid star. She plays Little Mary. She's really good.
Welcome to the Dollhouse.
Oh, no, that's somebody else. That's Heather Matarazzo. That's Heather Matarazzo. No, Haley was in something else. Not like, I think Curly Sue. I think she...
Oh, yeah. You're right. Curly Sue.
Yeah.
That's her.
So Mary Louise Wilson, she plays Mrs. Moorhead. And Lynn Collins plays Miriam. She's really good. Rue McClanahan as the Countess. She's greeted like a hero.
Amazing.
She's so good.
So funny.
And Jennifer Coolidge as Edith Potter.
Yeah. With all the kids.
I mean, it's just... they took lines away from her because she's so funny and the audience loves her so much. Like it just like they just let her do her thing. There's a segment that I read it in the original script. It's in the original play and then it's in this show. It's not in the movie. Yes, they don't have a lot of African-American characters in here.
I know.
They're maids and nurses and things like that. But there's a funny scene where a nurse confronts Edith. Edith is just being so obnoxious in the... she just had a baby and she's like smoking a cigarette and nursing at the same time. And then he's got the jaws of a dinosaur. And this woman talks back to her and just really like it's those are like the little differences that they have. It's just so good.
Careful of his back, Mrs. Dead.
Oh, I like the feeling so.
You wouldn't like it so much if you just had it. Oh, I had a terrible time. Didn't I, Nerve?
No, women like you don't know what a terrible time is. Try bearing a baby and scrubbing floors. Try having one in a cold, filthy kitchen. Without ether, without a change of linen, without a decent food, without a scent to bring it up. Then try getting up the next morning with your inside falling out to put your house in sight. Please. I hope one day you have one of your own, Mrs. Day. They're worth all that and more.
Isaac Mizrahi designed the costumes, and they're so opulent, and the sets are so amazing.
Great sets. Really great sets. Cynthia Nixon's Mary, very much. Mm-hmm. Really good choices. And I love the woman who plays her mother, Mary's mother.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name.
Mary Louise Wilson.
Yes. Yes. She's great. I almost like her better than the one that's in the movie. And I really like the one in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I thought was really weird that I had never noticed before, there's this line in the movie that Sylvia, it's Sylvia's line, where they're in the spa. They're working out, she and her gossipy friends. They know that this story is going to break in the newspaper about Crystal and Mary's husband. And April says, she says she's going to try to stop the story. They said, oh, it's too late to stop the story. And she says, oh, well, just let the story play out. Pretty soon people will not know, won't remember anything about it. Just like, you know, what's her name who jumped out of the window? I can't remember her name, so who cares? Well,
wow.
Claire Booth Luce had a friend who jumped out of a window. But it was after this play came out.
Do you know about the portrait?
Yes, I do know. I've seen the portrait. I've stood in front of the portrait. Her name was Dorothy Hale. She was socialite and I think also an actress, a theater person, and jumped out of a window in New York City. And she was a very good friend of Claire Booth Luce. And Claire Booth Luce, again, Depression, WPA is happening. Mm-hmm. Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera are in New York City. Diego Rivera is painting his famous murals in Rockefeller Center, among other things. And Claire Booth Luce asks Frida Kahlo to paint a painting in memory of Dorothy Hale, which she does.
Yeah. You could look it up. It's on Google. Just portrait of Dorothy Hale. Yeah, she. It's a painting of a woman on a ledge and a woman on the ground. It's not very uplifting.
It's not. But it is. I will say, in the style of that. I mean, that's sort of the thing that Frida was doing at the time. She was doing works that were reminiscent of these kinds of paintings in Mexican culture called retablos, which tell kind of cautionary tales, if you will. They have a lot of blood. They have a lot of violence sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're going to hire Frida Kahlo in that era, you got to kind of think that that's probably what you're going to get. But maybe she wasn't familiar with her work. I don't know. So, yeah, the painting is very graphically depicting, I'm sure, Frida Kahlo, being a very feminist painter, sympathized, you know, was probably, you know, heard the story and kind of wanted people to understand what had happened. And but anyway, she had painted it. She always had words in those kinds of paintings, the tableau paintings. Originally, the painting had said that it had been commissioned by it had Claire Booth Luce's name on it. And Claire Booth Luce was so shocked when she saw, you know, you figure your friend has done, you know, your friend has committed suicide. How sad. I can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. And you ask for a portrait so you can remember her, and this is what you get. And it also says, like, in text that you were the one who asked for this portrait. And she wanted to throw it out, but she was persuaded to keep it. But she put it away. And she also had her name painted out of the text. But it's a very, very famous, very powerful, really very feminist painting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so...
I had totally forgotten about that. And then I heard the line in the movie and I thought, oh my gosh, is that from the play? Is that line in the original play? Or did they put it in the movie after Dorothy Hale jumped out of the window? No, it is in the original play. Mm-hmm. It's just an awful coincidence.
So I wanted to ask you a question. I mean, I love all the performances here as well. So what did you think of in this midsection? There's an interview between the first act and the second act. There's an interview with Jason Alexander with the women. And
yeah,
not the best writing in this thing, I would say. His intro's a little shaky. He does this interview with these very smart women who are not domineering. You know, they're just actors, you know, talking about their parts, and then they go fade into him and he just says, "Ooh, I'm faint just being around all that estrogen."
Ooh, okay. I'm dizzy from estrogen. Now, where were we? Ah, yes. Mary, having been gossiped about, betrayed, and generally manhandled by her dearest friends, is on her way to Reno to get a divorce.
I'm like, oh, for God's sakes.
Like, yeah. You can almost hear the like, boom, boom, ba-doom, ba-doom, boom, the light bulb.
He's got great hands. He has to cover the hands. He can't hurt his hands. I mean, it's just like, it was 20 years ago. So, okay.
It was still very much the 90s, you know, even though it was the early 2000s. There was a lot of 90s energy going on there. I know it's really hokey, but the perform. I know I just kind of. I have to admit, I kind of like skipped some bits of it.
Oh, yeah, I gotcha.
Cringy. It was so cringy, but the performance, the production, really good, so well done. I so wish I had seen it in person. I would have loved to have seen it in person.
I wish you and I could have gone together.
Oh.
We were both living in the city at the same time. I know this. I miss New York so much. I miss the theater, and for just like for experiences like this, it's so great to be in an audience and laugh. And Jennifer Coolidge is so funny. Kirsten Johnson and Jennifer Tilly in the bathroom scene. And she's getting out of the shower. She goes, "Oh, I didn't think you groomed there." It just all this stuff. It's so good. It's so funny.
My favorite scene, my favorite scene in the movie, I love the bathtub scene. I love the bathtub scene all the way around. It's so funny. It's so well written. When Sylvia comes in, and even before when she's on the phone, the whole thing is great. But my favorite scene with Joan Crawford is when she's in the shop and Stephen calls to break the date, and she's like sweet talking on the phone and also yelling at her friend at the same time back and forth. And she's switching back and forth from being like cutting and vicious with her friend to being sweet and sultry and seductive with her boyfriend. I just thought that it's just such a well acted scene. It's so good. Joan Crawford is just so brilliant.
She is. And I love the woman that plays the ranch person in the revival. She's really good too.
I don't know her. I don't know who she was, but she was very good.
Julie Halston. Yeah, she's great. I mean, it's just all great people. I don't know how to say. I don't have any words are escaping me now. They're just really, really good performances.
Each performance is really good, but it's also, you know, it's the ensemble chemistry in both productions that we're talking about now that makes it work so well and makes it, you know, you don't think like, oh, you know, so-and-so, like Norma Shearer is a little bit of a, little bit of a damp spot, if you will, but
not, a wet noodle,
but not, it's, you know, it's all of them together, especially like when they're at the ranch, the way these different, all these different characters and the really brilliant actresses that are playing these different characters, the way that they are playing off of each other and the energy that they have between each other is so exciting to watch.
Yeah. So I forgot to ask, I didn't see the 2008 remake. Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So it's Diane English. Like it. No.
No.
Oh no.
I didn't like it at all. I think here's why. Well, let's talk about who's in it. Cause it had, again, big names. We got Annette Bening, right? Meg Ryan, right? I'm trying to remember who all is in it. It was, I didn't rewatch time. Oh yeah. Eva Mendes is Crystal. Ava is Crystal, right? And Jada Pinkett. And
Cloris
what's her name? Will and Grace.
Oh,
she's the one with all the kids.
Deborah Messing. Yeah.
Here's why I think it doesn't work. It's what year was it? I'm looking at it right now.
2008.
Yes, Meg Ryan, Cloris Leachman. That's right. Who? I mean, she's always fabulous. Yeah. But just like we were talking, what's great, I think, about the 2001. Production is that it's set in the 30s, right? So we understand when Mary is the things that Mary says about her marriage and the choices that she's faced with, let alone what all the other women are saying, but Mary specifically, you get it because it's 1936. What is she going to do?
Right.
She's going to like become a CPA? No.
Right.
She can't. She literally cannot. She can't even buy a car and drive away. She can't do any of those things. So, and again, you know, you're looking at Depression era. Again, you're looking at that dichotomy of the classes. So it makes some, there's logic there, even to a contemporary audience. But by setting it in the 30s, you get it in a way that then you can apply it to the modern day. What the 2008 one does is put the story in the modern day, and it just does not work. First of all, you lose, you know, we just don't have, we do, but we like to think we don't have the separation of the classes in such a stark, codified way like they had that. So it's like trying to pretend like there's not this class separation. It's trying to pretend like, it's kind of like these aren't really pampered ladies. Like they're, it's trying to present this upper class that we're kind of making fun of in a scathing way, but presenting them away like they're just like us. You know, they have problems too. And they have, it just really falls flat that just that of bringing it into the modern day, I think really works against it, really keeps you from, it's just not believable. And Meg Ryan is Mary. I think Mary is running a business. She has a, it's just like the contemporary touches really detract from the messages and the real themes and the fun of it. It's just not making fun of the upper class. It's just not good. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, there was just nothing about, I mean, Diane English wrote it and directed it. And I like Diane English. She's really talented. She did Murphy Brown.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you would think she would have a handle on it, but yeah, it doesn't.
Who was it that produced it? Who was it that directed it, though? I'm trying to remember.
I think she directed it. That's what it says in Wikipedia.
She did, yes. I mean, the houses are cool. I don't like it. I don't buy it. The performances are, it's not the performances, it's just the, it's literally for me just the moving it into the contemporary time that makes it not work. I'm not laughing at them like I should be laughing at them.
Right. It's got to be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found it not as funny, even though they're saying the same stuff. So, yeah, not a fan.
All right. Which version are you the biggest fan of?
Oh, 39.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. Although I love the 2001. I prefer, with the exception of Mary, I prefer Cynthia Nixon's Mary.
Yes.
To Norma Shearer's Mary. I think her Mary, I believe much more. And you sort of, yeah, she makes more sense. She also seems, one of the things I really liked about Cynthia Nixon's performance is you get a sense that you don't get in the movie of Mary's, that Mary feels the limitation of her, quote, so-called exalted station in life. Yes, she's rich and privileged, but it's also kind of a cage,
mm-hmm.
you know. Cynthia Nixon's Mary seems to be aware of, I only have so many options available to me. You know, what am I supposed to do here? Whereas Norma Shearer is more like, I love him, but I love him, you know, and I have no pride. Which anyway, so I think Cynthia Nixon's Mary is better. But in terms of like all the other performances and those other 2001 is a spectacular cast. But I got to give it to the, I don't think you would have that. You wouldn't have that if you didn't have the 39 version.
I completely agree with you. And if you, it's on YouTube now. So while you can watch it.
Mm-hmm. And not to say that they're copying, they're not at all copying 39, but I think they're definitely building on that production in a way that I just love.
Yeah, they modernize it. And in the right ways. And like
in
you said,
the right way.
Yeah. And it's just the art direction's beautiful. The costumes are beautiful.
Right.
Yeah. You just want to be there with the audience and laugh. I mean, it's just it's such a good performance.
It's super, super good. I loved it. I loved it. I loved that in both of them, the hair, mm-hmm. just the makeup, the everything. They're both great. Watch them both. You will love them both. Even though it's the exact same script, pretty much, you will love them. I would watch them, you know, watch 39, then watch 2001. It's delightful. They're both a delight.
Yes. And if you need it, yeah, we could all use a diversion right now. This is a great diversion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's terrific. So that wraps up March.
Yes.
Woo. What are we doing next?
We had some suggestions. We have Being There, which is the Peter Sellers movie.
Yeah,
it's only 162 pages, and that's available. That could be interesting.
Hal Ashby.
I think it was the last movie he directed, or the last big hit movie that he another Hal Ashby. You're right. Somebody recommended The Joy Luck Club.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little longer.
Yes. I haven't read it in years and years, but I do remember it being a bit long. Okay.
Yeah. And then I was going back to, let's see, Love Story, people asked for that.
Oh.
I haven't seen the movie in years. And I haven't read the book.
You know what? It's so weird. Why was I watching this stuff? I started watching. This is so weird. This is such like a YouTube thing because I don't have television, right? Mm-hmm. So I really just watch YouTube and streaming things. I got sucked into watching something about John McEnroe. Why? I don't know. YouTube thought, oh, hey, Margo, you might enjoy this video with John McEnroe reminiscing about his tennis career.
Sure.
I'm not like, I like tennis, but I'm not like a massive tennis fan. I don't know why I recommended this, but it did. So I watched it. Then it recommended videos to me about Tatum O'Neill, who was married to John McEnroe.
Oh.
Then it recommended things about Ryan O'Neill. And then it recommended things about Ally McGraw. And then, of course, I started seeing all kinds of stuff about Love Story. So I just happened to have been watching things about Love Story recently.
Because
of this John McEnroe video thing that YouTube thought I would enjoy.
Yeah. So that was one. And then we can go back to the Walter Tevis stuff, who did The Queen's Gambit, The Hustlers, really short, Man Who Fell to Earth. It would be fun to do The Hustler and then The Color of Money. He wrote both. I haven't seen either movie in forever.
Me either.
A Simple Plan is one. I mean, so it's, we have a lot of different options here. That's a longer one too, though. I think it's like 392 pages.
Yeah, we need to do a. I need to do a short one this week. Oh, let's do The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, it's also available on Audible.
I love that movie.
I do too. It's a David Bowie movie, 1976, based on the novel. The author is
Buck Henry.
Buck Henry?
Yeah, Buck Henry's in it.
I love Buck Henry.
Me too.
Can we double check and make sure it's available? It's Walter Tevis, T-E-V-I-S. It's a Bowie film. It's 226 pages. That's
doable. Okay.
That's very doable.
The Man Who... yeah, here it is. Yeah.
And the movie? Not hard.
And the movie in Prime Video. Let's see if it's in Prime Video. It is on Amazon Prime Video.
Perfect.
Yep.
Let's get some Bowie going.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be fun. That'll be interesting. So you guys, that's the episode today. If you want to support the show, we do have a Patreon page and we've been doing this for 6 years. We have a bunch of episodes up there that just are no longer in the regular feed. So we have a couple of really affordable options. It just helps us to buy the books and the movies and to pay for the cost for the hosting and yada, yada, yada. Wherever you get your podcasts, if you want to leave us a review, that'd be great. If you have a second to leave us 5 stars, that would be amazing. Follow us on all the things socially. And Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. And my blog is brooklynfitchick.com. And we'll be back soon with a new episode.
Ooh, okay. I'm dizzy from estrogen. Now, where were we? Ah, yes.
Thank you so much for listening to the Book versus Movie podcast. We're a part of the Electronic Media Collective, and we follow the hashtags Podern Family and Lady Pod Squad. You can find us on social media at Book versus a Movie. You just spelled it all out for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can send us an email at bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to join our Facebook group, look for us under Book vs Movie Podcast Group in Facebook. Ask to join, and you may be lucky enough to get in. We also have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. Go to patreon.com and look for Book vs Movie Podcast. We record the show with our handy H6N, donated by those of you who were nice enough to contribute to the Patreon page. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.
Thank you.